and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thanks for taking time to be with us this week. Today I have with us Chef Polly Halstead, and this is kind of a continuation of last week's show with Nora Gedgaudas on paleo diet. Polly's written a beautiful cookbook, Primal Cuisine, and I'd like to introduce her and let her tell us a little bit about herself before we get started. Polly, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. And if you would, tell us a little bit about you, where people can find you and see what you do and order your book.
Okay. Well, I was a Napa Valley-based chef and caterer for over 20 years. I had a catering company called The Best of Everything. And after I retired in 2003, I kind of went on the road for a while, but I wound up in Oregon and had the good fortune to meet Nora Gedgaudas in 2009. And I became her client, and she did a lot of testing of various things, which we can talk about, and then she put me on the paleo diet. And it really radically changed my life and health.
She's great, isn't she? I love her book. And her book is...
It's wonderful.
What's the name of her book? Primal Body, Primal Mind.
Yes. Primal Body, Primal Mind.
So where can people find you?
Well, they can find my book on Barnes & Noble, Amazon. My book is in a lot of bookstores as well around the nation. And so it's really easy to get a hold of. They can go to my website, www.theprimalcuisine.com, and they can read a lot of various things on the website to learn more about me, my history, and some recipes and stuff.
So we talked about what paleo diet is last week and why we want to do it or why we might consider doing it. So could you tell us how we stock our kitchen to get started? What do we go out and look for, first of all?
Okay, well, in the cookbook, I have a whole pantry section, but being a California chef and caterer, I did a lot of shopping at the farmer's market. And during the 90s, California began to have some ranchers who began to produce grass-fed beef, which closely approximates wild meat. It hasn't been fed any grains. And I would say the grass-fed beef is the basis now of doing the paleo diet, the grass-fed beef and the wild fish. But also important are the really good oils to use, extra virgin olive oil, ghee or grass-fed butter, coconut oil, and the fats from the animals. What sets the paleo diet apart from maybe, say, the Atkins diet or, some of the other diets, because you wouldn't consider a high-fat diet a diet, but actually the percentage of fat in the paleo regime is very high. So it's a moderate amount of protein, not big slabs of meat, and a high fat, almost 40 to 50% of the amount of fat equal to the meat. So it's a high fat diet. And when I went on the diet, I had been living with vegetarians so for a while, and so we naturally that became a carb-based diet, and I gained a lot of weight. But when Nora put me on the paleo diet, I cut the carbs, I added the fats, and lost about 10 to 15 pounds within a couple of months. So it actually raised my metabolism, adding the fats.
I did the same thing. The same thing happened to me. Another thing that happened to me is, and I just got this lab test about 2 weeks ago. I've been on a grass-fed meat diet, paleo diet, pretty much paleo for the past maybe 4 months. Are you there?
Yeah.
There was a noise. Yeah, I did too. And when I got my lab, I had really high cholesterol with really bad ratios. When I got my lab test back the other day, and I eat a tremendous amount of that. I eat a lot. I put ghee in everything. I eat meat every day, a couple of times a day, and my cholesterol ratios were perfect. I mean,
isn't that
perfect.
Incredible how that happens? We actually have to eat good cholesterol every day.
I wasn't shocked that it happened because I've studied about this and I get it, but the people that I tell that this happened were shocked about it because they don't they think that, you know, it's going to be bad for them.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about that? A little bit more about that, how to use ghee and how to use the oils? Because what I'd like to hear you do is, what do we put in our pantry? And then I'd like to do a few minutes about how do you cook the food? Because do you cook the food on high? Do you cook it on medium? How do you flavor oils? How do you put together meals that taste good if you go from a pasta with grilled vegetables and meats to suddenly not being able to have that anymore? What are some meals that we can put together
that our kids
will eat?
Let us remember, that is the vehicle of flavor. So I have a photograph in the book that shows everything that I have right by my stove, which is the homemade ghee, coconut oil, cold-pressed sesame oil. Those are the oils that I cook with. And sometimes I mix the oil in the pan, you know, depending on the dish that I'm doing. All those three oils have a high smoke point, so they will not burn. You do not want to cook with avocado oil or olive oil because they have a low smoke point and they'll burn. It'll change the flavor of those oils. So cook with a high heat oil, specifically those. You want to have oils that are not coming from genetically modified plants, so you're avoiding a lot of those vegetable oils that you know are on the market today. So choosing your oils is really important. Also, by the stove, I have a variety of, say, vinegars, balsamic vinegar, rice wine vinegar, and and apple cider vinegar. So I have everything that I need right there by the stove. I have my garlic sitting by the stove and my peppermint, my sea salt. So everything is within easy reach. What I like to do as a chef is not have to search around for stuff when I'm beginning to cook. And it was a little difficult for me to do a recipe book because I'm kind of a cook-by-the-seat-of-your-pants kind of person, but a lot of people really need to follow a recipe and have that broken out. And so in my refrigerator, I'll probably have the grass-fed butter, the pastured eggs. I am allergic to dairy casein, but I've switched over to sheep's milk or goat's milk products like cheeses and things like that. So I do use those. Some people don't use any dairy at all with a paleo or primal diet, but sort of depends on you and what you can do in your diet. So
what would you, when I converted, I fed my husband salad for breakfast every day, and he hated that. What can we have for breakfast? Because he was used to having pancakes and bacon and eggs.
Breakfast
and
has always been hard
and...
for me too, because I'm not normally real hungry at breakfast, but what I might do is I have the goat's milk yogurt. I might put some berries on there and sprinkle some hemp seeds on there or some sunflower seeds. You might make a berry smoothie. I happen to be cross-reactive with eggs. When I eat eggs, my body thinks it's gluten because I had that Cyrex lab test. So I'll just go for 3 pieces of bacon. Nothing wrong with a few slices of bacon for breakfast.
So how do you fit fill them up. For somebody that's used to eating a big breakfast, that's his biggest complaint. I don't get filled up because he doesn't have that all that toast. And how do you fill them up? And Mills, too, actually. How do you fill them up?
And what? I didn't hear that last sentence.
How do you get them to fill up? Because when I make, a meal and a vegetable, he complains because he has no carbs. Because he says, I don't feel full when I go to bed. How do you fill them up?
Right. Well, you can take sausages are great, and you can, saute some onions and red peppers, a little garlic in the pan, throw in a bunch of spinach and some chopped up sausages. That makes a nice breakfast, I think, and it's filling. Does he eat eggs?
The problem is getting enough, grass-fed or free-range food. So can you tell us some recipes that maybe the listeners can do if they can't, get a big variety of grass-fed meat?
Sure. Well, in the cookbook, I have some eggs baked in cream. You just butter a ramekin, like a 6-ounce ramekin, and drop a couple eggs in there, and then top it with a little cream and salt and pepper, and it takes about 20 minutes in the oven to bake at 350, and the eggs come out really creamy tasting. They're just delicious. I have several frittata recipes that are really good. You saute your vegetables, spinach, onions, peppers, or mushrooms or whatever. Put those in a baking dish. Top it with a little goat cheese, or you don't have to use cheese if you don't want to. And then you beat your eggs, pour that over the top of the vegetables, and bake that in the oven. It takes about a half an hour. That's delicious, and that's great for, a Saturday or Sunday meal. Actually, I think it's really substantial. Also, some people, paleo people, are still eating sweet potatoes or yams, and you can bake those the night before and then slice them cold and kind of brown them in the pan, too. Those are really good. So,
that's a good idea.
Yeah, and then serve the eggs on the side like a little omelet or, I just always loved just fried eggs with the egg yolk kind of running. I always loved egg yolks. That was my favorite growing up. So,
another problem that I find my family complaining about, before I started doing this, I'd make these beautiful roasts for dinner with this nice thick gravy, or at least thickened gravy. We don't do that anymore. They miss that thickened gravy. Do you have a way to thicken any gravies, or do you just have it thin? How do you deal with that?
In French cooking or whatever, you would make a really very rich bone broth that has a lot of gelatin in it, and then you would use that kind of as a base. And with your meat juices, you add some of that, maybe some red wine, and then you reduce it till it's very thick. So it becomes like a reduction sauce rather than a gravy. And believe me, I think it is even more satisfying flavor-wise than a gravy. It's a sort of a very kind of refined sauce to do. They do it in restaurants. What they do is they saute, your meat or your steak, and then they'll put some of that really rich beef stock into the pan and reduce it with a little bit of wine in there, and then put that on top of the steak. So that works really well.
When you say reduce it, do you mean cook it? What do you mean when you say that?
Well, you have, once you put your stock in the pan with a little bit of wine or what you're going to use, the heat is on high. So and you have a sort of a flat pan, so the liquid in there will reduce really quickly. And the way you can tell whether it's thick enough is you just take a spoon, and when the sauce starts coating the spoon, then it's thick enough. You'd be able to really see, you know, what that looks like and feels like. But when the sauce is coating the spoon, then it's ready.
So that brings another question, Mom. I have been cooking only on medium heat or below, which kind of limits what you can do. Is it, does it not change the structure of the molecule so that it's not good for you if you boil the liquid? Is that okay if it's, as long as it's not a
Pentameter
or something?
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Do you have a gas stove or an electric stove?
Yes, gas. But it doesn't change the, it doesn't make it, the fats in it unhealthy? It's okay to do that?
No, not if you are using high heat oils. Now, a lot of people don't understand this. Of course, we all grew up cooking with olive oil, but when I met Nora, you know, she said, don't heat the olive oil because that will change it. It depends on the oil. But with the ghee, once it, you have the clarified butter, and with coconut oil and with sesame oil, those oils are high heat oils, and it will not change the molecular structure of those. So you're fine with those. Yeah.
So
that's why I just have a picture. I have a picture in my book because always a picture is worth a thousand words.
I'm looking at it right now.
So.
It's actually on page 13. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah,
I love this
yeah.
book. It's a beautiful illustrated book. It's just lovely.
Thanks. Well, I try to make it easy for people to understand by, you know, taking the photos. I did all the photos myself, by the way.
But it's just a beautiful book.
Oh,
so what do you use to sweeten things? Or do you make any sweet things?
Well, I still do. Let's talk about that. I was, when I met Nora, I was highly hypoglycemic. I had hypoglycemia my whole life to the point where, you know, I'd feel like I was going to faint and get cranky and whatever. So I was highly addicted to carbs every couple hours. But, you know, the... wrestling with that sweet taste is really difficult, but once you get on the paleo diet, your neurotransmitters that want the sweet taste begin to be reduced. So you're using natural fruit flavors, and my recipe has only stevia in it, 100% stevia extract or whatever in some of the recipes. But other than that, the book has no added sugars, no honey, no agave, and no maple syrup. So,
and what about xylitol?
No, none of those other ones.
So what do you cook for diabetics?
Well,
they can't have berries. What do you get them?
Berries are great because they are the lowest glycemic. I think strawberries have 6 grams of sugars per cup. That's one of the lowest. What for diabetics, you know, you really want to keep your grams of sugars and carbohydrates between 25 and 50 a day. I try to keep mine, you know, right around 25. So you have to really read labels. You have to know your kind of own metabolism and stuff like that, but, you know, you really have to eliminate carbs. And when I, you know, I worked with Nora a little bit on this cookbook. She kind of, you know, reviewed it for me. Boy, she had me take out carrots and beets and, you know, any kind of vegetable that had a higher sugar content because she just felt like... you know, if you have diabetes or problems with weight, you don't need any extra sugars at all. So this cookbook is very strict that way.
So what? Give me an idea of a meal, because I have had several people ask me, what do we do if we're diabetic? Help us figure out something that we can eat, because we're trying. We're trying. So give us a day's meal for us.
All right. Well, quite frankly, this whole cookbook is ideal for people who have diabetes, because I have worked just to take out all the sugars and carbs as much as possible, except for a little bit of fruit. But, okay, so in the morning, you know, if you're into smoothies or whatever, a lot of people don't want to do breakfast. I have a mint chocolate smoothie made with almond milk. You can make it with coconut milk, too. You can put in some of the New Medica gluten-free power greens and some cocoa powder and some mint and vanilla, a little bit of stevia, and just blend that. So that's a lot of fun. There's a lot of, I think, kind of really fun breakfast drinks in here, like the cardamom lassi, which is just goat yogurt, a little stevia, and a little cardamom. That's real fun, and it's different. And the strawberry sunrise with grapefruit juice and coconut milk. If you want to cook more, I have a question before we go.
The coconut milk, does that have sugar in it? Is that okay for a diabetic?
Oh, yes, absolutely okay. No, it doesn't have any sugars in it. And
okay,
I get the powdered coconut milk from Z Naturals. I think they're out of Florida. You can go to their website. And then I make my own coconut milk out of that, and I make my own coconut milk ice creams using that. You can get a 5-pound bag of it, and it has a naturally sweeter taste, I think, than the canned coconut milk. So,
where do you get this?
It's Z Naturals. You can go on their website, znaturals.com, and they have a wonderful array of coconut products, but the powdered coconut milk is the best.
That sounds really good. I've already had dinner, but it makes me want to go do something.
Yeah, and
okay.
Also, I just want to say, too, I've learned that a little bit of vanilla in something actually has the aroma of the vanilla satisfies that sweet taste, the sweet craving. So if you use a little bit of vanilla in your drinks or in your dessert, it actually, I think, helps to cut the cravings for additional sugar. It's kind of like a little trick for your brain.
So if you had to pick up some of your favorite recipes, what would it, and mind you, easy ones that somebody can start out with, what would they be? Give us an idea of some that you have in your book. You have a beautiful meatloaf in there. I mean, people think that, I did at least when I first started doing this, that I had to have a small chunk of meat or a chunk of fish and a steamed vegetable and, you know, I'm done. And it got boring really fast, made it hard to do. So
yeah.
Exciting things we can do.
Right. Well, I like foods from all over the world. You know, I lived in California in the Bay Area, so we're used to Thai food, Mexican food, all those kinds of foods that we go to a restaurant to eat. Well, you know, when you're on the paleo diet or trying to, manage your gluten or your low sugar, you're not going to wind up in restaurants too often. So what I try to do is take a lot of favorites that we all know and love and put them into the cookbook. You know, we have tacos once or twice a week. Usually we have fish tacos one night. Tonight I had some leftover chicken. We're having chicken tacos in like a butter lettuce tortilla and a coleslaw. So those are real easy, and actually tacos or wraps like that are really easy when you have leftover meat or fish, you know. So, you know, I don't like to throw food away, so I like to be able to utilize whatever's left over into a meal for the next day. So the tacos work really well like that. I have, I think, the best Thai dressing in the world. with the Thai salad with a spicy dressing, and you can actually use that dressing as a marinade. So that's wonderful. Well, with that meatloaf, what I like to do, we have mashed cauliflower now instead of mashed potatoes, and we like mashed cauliflower better than mashed potatoes. You can put butter and cream in there, salt and pepper, and blend it in the processor, and it's just fantastic.
I have to tell you, we do that too, and my little boy, who he's the pickiest eater I've ever seen in my life, actually likes them better than mashed potatoes. He didn't know the difference at first. He went, "What'd you do to these potatoes?" Well, I like them better. They're not as thick and clumpy.
Yeah, and they have a natural sweet taste. This is the thing. When you get off sugars, when you really wean yourself and you start to taste, then you start to taste the natural, subtle, sweet flavors in foods like the vegetables and everything. I mean, you really begin to appreciate the taste of just the natural food, I think. So
it's okay to fry a little bit in the coconut oil and the ghee and the, what was the other one, sesame oil. We can do it a little, I mean, at least sear the sides of the meat. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I use a lot of those oils when I cook, and a lot of times I mix the ghee and the coconut oil together just for, the different flavors. And I use a lot of oils, and I mix my oils every day to make sure I get some of each kind of oil and fat, because each one of them does a little something different in your body. So I really utilize all the oils and fats every day.
Tell us how you would do some of those things, because not everybody knows how to pinch hit at a stove. Give us some ideas, because I think that's a great idea, and it never occurred to me to do it. Can you tell us how you would do it, go about doing it?
Yeah.
And the tasty thing that you do, what piece of meat would you use, and how do you mix them? Do you mix them before you put them in or after you put them in? How do you do that?
Okay, well, normally what I do, depending on what I'm going to cook, is I get the pan hot first, pretty hot, because normally you're
medium hot? What is hot?
Yeah, I would say medium hot. Sometimes you want it smoking hot, but I would say medium hot. I never measure my oils when I put them in the pan. I usually use a tablespoon, so I'm putting in a lot of oil. I do not skimp on the ghee or, sesame oil or coconut oil. And I might put two or three tablespoons in there, too. So, my thing is the more fat, the better. And then I add, what I'm going to cook, whether it's a chicken breast, I sear it on both sides, salt and pepper it, sear it on both sides, and then I might finish it in the oven for 15 minutes. If you brown it on both sides, stick it in the oven for 15 minutes and pull it out. It's
on what temperature?
Normally about between 350 and 400, depending on what you're cooking and how thick it is. But that's the way I normally just cook something really simply, like sear the pork chop on both sides and put it in a 400-degree oven for 15 minutes, or, a sort of a thick steak. I like my meat kind of rare, I don't like pork real rare, but I like it a little pink. I don't like it dried out, so, I like that still a little pinkness and juiciness around the bone.
And what do you do for sauces? Like, we don't do mayonnaise anymore because it's got the bad oil in it. What do you do for sauces?
Well, I've got some recipes in my book to make mayonnaises and sauces. I just made some mayonnaise yesterday, and that's a really good way to use your different oils. You can use avocado oil, the sesame oil or olive oil to make your aioli or mayonnaise. Those are wonderful to put on things. Or I might make, you know, for instance, if I am doing a chicken breast in the pan, I'll pull the hot pan out of the oven, take the chicken breast out, add some more butter to the pan, some lemon juice, and maybe some capers, and maybe just a tiny splash of white wine like I described before, and then, you know, the burner's on high, and then you just reduce that with the pan juices in there, stirring it around until it coats the spoon, like I said, and then just put that over the chicken. And you can do pork chops that way as well. That's really good. So you just make a little bit of sauce in the pan. Doesn't hurt just to throw a little bit more butter in there, a little splash of wine, and, you know, and then you're there. That's what
really good
cooks do in the restaurant. It's mostly all sauté, you know, so they'll pull something out of the oven and they'll do the sauce reduction right in the pan, and it just takes a minute. I mean, it's really fast. You're not laboring
over
the sauce.
If you were going to make some chicken salad, I'm looking at your pasture egg salad right now. How would you do the mayonnaise to go in there? Give somebody an idea how you would make that mayonnaise with a good oil.
Okay. Let me turn to the salad section here because
it's
I have
129.
A basic 129.
That particular,
okay, thank you.
That particular one is.
Oh, yeah. So the mayonnaise recipe is on page 123. And you start with an egg yolk that is room temperature, and you can add mustard. I have a variety of mustards in the refrigerator. I'm big on mustard, so you add a little bit of mustard, maybe a little bit of lemon juice or a flavored vinegar to your mayonnaise, and then you turn the blender on. And this is the thing. You have to add the oil in a very slow, thin stream on high, and then the mayonnaise will emulsify, and then it'll become mayonnaise. After it does that, for instance, you could add a little bit of roasted red bell pepper, or you could add maybe some basil or other herbs to flavor the mayonnaise with. And so you can do a variety, like there's one here for a caper tarragon or the red pepper. So you can then flavor the mayonnaise, differently. You can roast some garlic and drop some roasted garlic in there. So once you know how to make the basic mayonnaise, then you can do a lot of different variations. And those are wonderful just to top on a piece of fish or meat, or use in salad. So, you can really be creative with the mayonnaise.
That sounds wonderful. So you have
there's a good ranch dressing recipe in here, too. The ranch dressing
Tell
recipe
us about
is
it.
Really good.
Tell us about it. Because, giving them tastes like this is going to make them want to go and get this book. I mean, it's got beautiful pictures, beautiful recipes.
Oh, yeah. So, well, thanks.
How would you
start with the basic mayonnaise recipe for the ranch dressing, and then you add celery leaves, parsley, a little scallion, oregano, garlic, onion powder, and lemon juice, and you blend all that together. And we've all grown up using that ranch dressing from the grocery store, right? And it's got all that guar gum and all that preservatives in it. It's kind of gunky. This ranch dressing is so clean and tasty. And also, if you have kids, you can have them eat their vegetables, raw vegetables, carrot sticks for a snack and all that. Just give them a little glass full of the ranch dressing and some vegetables, and they can dip it in, and it's really fun.
Do you plan your meals every week?
No, not really. I go to the
shop.
I go to the store, and I let my kind of stomach and intuition be my guide. You know, I like to, I'm a sort of a touchy-feely kind of person. I like to go and see what's fresh. Like I go to the seafood and I see, you know, I know the days when the fish comes in, so I like my fish as fresh as possible. We live in the mountains, so we're not over by the coast, but I like my fish really fresh. So, you know, if the fish is fresh, I'll usually pick, you know, fish. But otherwise, we're eating a lot of bison this day instead of the ground beef, because we think it has sort of a richer flavor. We like it, so we make bison burgers. What I'll do is make the patty, and I almost always caramelize some onions first. You know, I'll take an onion and, you know, put some ghee in the pan and just caramelize the onion. It takes about 15 minutes, and then I'll do my burger, and then I'll put the caramelized onion over the top of the burger. I might melt some Manchego cheese on top of the burger too, and then instead of serving the burger with a bun, I'll just make a really nice green salad and put it on top. That makes a delicious dinner. So that bison just really is filling, I think, and it has that really hearty taste. So that's very satisfying.
So do you go every day to the store? Because one of the complaints, because, you know, we try to do as much organic as we can. One of the complaints people always give me is it's too expensive. But I find when you eat paleo that food goes a longer way because you feel fuller, because you're, you know, not having those short-term carbs. How do you shop for this so that you don't go to the store and spend a whole bunch of money every day? Because, you know, when you go to the store too many times, you spend too much money on things you don't really need. How do you plan what you're going to get? So that, does that make sense?
You may agree with me, but I think when you're buying all those sort of snack items that people eat, the potato chips, the crackers, the cookies, that stuff is really expensive. I mean, it's no nutrients for a lot of money. And like we talked about before, the thing that separates the paleo diet from, say, the Atkins diet is you have really reduced the amount of protein that you need at each meal to no more than 25 grams. That's like 3 ounces. So you're eating less protein, not more, and the protein is the most expensive part of the meal. So I think, you know, cutting out all those expensive snack items and those beverages, then you're going to be able to spend your money on quality, the quality protein. But you don't need that much of the protein. So I think if you shop well, it shouldn't have an economic impact at all. You know,
so you've got about,
I don't think it's more expensive. And as Nora would say, in the long run, your good health is going to cost you a lot less than poor health later on down the road, you know. So,
do you have small kids, or do you have kids at home?
No, actually, I'm 68 years old, and my kids are heading towards 50, you know. And I have a grandson who's 26. So, you know, I didn't feel well most of my life. I had a lot of issues, a lot of depression, all that stuff. My mom had schizophrenia, and I inherited this genetic disorder, which Nora helped me kind of get on top of. But at any rate, so when I was in my 60s, I started the paleo diet, and I have to say, all my symptoms, all the depression and everything went away. I have never felt better.
I have to say the same thing for myself, too. I
yeah.
struggle with my child, you know, because he's 14, and he we never had hamburger helper or those kinds of things, but he did have sandwiches and, you know, chips with sandwiches and, you know, macaroni and cheese. I struggle getting him, you know, to not want those things anymore and to just do the veggies. Like tonight we had some steak and we had rainbow kale and we had cauliflower mashed potatoes. He does not want to eat anything.
Oh gosh, it's so hard with the teenagers. Oh gosh, it is. And even my grandson,
really,
he's 26, you know, he's had all kinds of problems in the last few years, panic attacks and this, that, and the other thing. And I just say, you got to cut out the wheat, you know. I mean, it's really hard with the kids.
It is. I think it's gotten better over time, but it hasn't been very long, and we're still adjusting. But you've got about,
you know,
10
yeah.
minutes. You can talk about anything you want to talk about. I can ask you more questions, or I'd just like for you to talk if you have some stories to tell or some
sure.
illnesses that got better, more, you know, anything like that. I'd love anything to encourage my listeners to eat a healthier diet.
Sure. Well, since my mother had the schizophrenia, you know, I was always really interested in what caused it. Was I going to get schizophrenia? Were my kids or whatever? What was that anyway? And so in the back of Nora's book, there's a couple of pages on this genetic condition called pyroluria. It has about 30 symptoms, and pyroluria is one of the contributors to schizophrenia. Well, I had, out of about 30 symptoms, I had about 22. That's what made me call her. She was about an hour away from where I lived, and I said, well, my mother has schizophrenia. I have all these symptoms and everything. And she said, well, come see me. So I did. And the test for pyroluria is a $50 urine test. And the pyroluria figures into not only schizophrenia, but alcoholism, ADD, ADHD, and various kinds of brain problems. So it's really important to know about this test. Well, at any rate, I tested positive for the pyroluria, which is an extreme vitamin B6 and zinc deficiency. Your body is excreting the vitamin B6 and zinc through the urine instead of retaining it. And vitamin B6 and zinc are essential for brain health. So not only did she, Nora put me on the paleo diet, but then I began supplementing with a vitamin B6 and zinc. And I think both of those things, going on the paleo diet and then the supplementation, cured my depression forever. In 3 months, it was that fast. And I had spent years taking, you know, some medications and stuff like that that never really worked. So I highly recommend people getting this test if they have any of those symptoms. But more importantly, I've really continued to study the brain and how certain nutrients really help support the brain, like vitamin D3, the omega-3 fatty acids, and all of that. And we're so depleted in our food sources these days, you know, mineral depletion in the soils and stuff, we're just not getting those nutrients. So even if we're eating organic vegetables, grass-fed meat and all that, sometimes it's very important to be tested so you know what your nutrient levels are so you can take certain supplements if you need them. You know, we really have to sort of refortify ourselves here.
Sitting here, there's a man named William Walsh, and I'm looking for his book right now. But he wrote an entire book. His area of expertise, he was at the Pfeiffer Clinic, and his area of expertise is B6, P5P, and pyroluria. And he wrote a book about it. I can't think of what the book is, but if you search for William Walsh, PhD, you'll find that book. It's something about nutrients, or I can't remember.
Yeah,
it's
well, there's the orthomolecular medicine. One
that
of
might
the
be
guys
it.
Is Abram Hoffer. And
now he's dead.
Yeah, I know.
But Bill's carrying on his work.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, I am very interested in that as well. Yeah, the orthomolecular medicine.
When we hang up, I'll find Bill's book and
Yeah.
And
I'd be very interested
in it. And call you and tell you the name, because he really does amazing work, and that's his specific area of research, is that B6. That's his thing. Anyway, so you got a few more
Well, it was miraculous. You know, I can't recommend getting these tests and supplementing with these things, because you do not need to take a lot of those pharmaceuticals that they give you these days. I mean, you really have to get at the heart of the problem, which is nutrient deficiency.
So, wait a minute, let me get back here over my notes. See what else I wanted to ask you. Carbs and root vegetables, are they okay on the paleo diet?
Well, I still like root vegetables. You know, I like to grate beets over my salad sometimes. I still put carrots and things. I think it really all depends on you, whether, you know, you really have to keep your sugars really, really low. When I did this particular book, Nora recommended that I take out all the root vegetables, because she's really big on almost zero carbs and sugars. But some people can't be that extreme, so you just have to listen to your body and do what you can.
Oh, here it is. It's William J. Walsh, and the book is called Nutrient Power, Heal Your Biochemistry and Heal Your Brain.
Wow.
And I think he actually worked with Abram Thumb and with Carl Pfeiffer, so you'd really like that. It's a really great book.
Wow, sounds like it. Well, I'll look it up.
You want to go tell us one more time where we can find you?
Again? Yes. Well, my website is www.theprimalcuisine.com. I have a Facebook page, which is Primal Cuisine Cooking for the Paleo Diet, same as the title to my book. I have a lot of information on that Facebook page. And you can go there, and please like it while you're there. And you can buy my books from Barnes & Noble or Amazon.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you so much, Polly. This is a beautiful book.
I love it.
I'm going to get some and give them as gifts. I think it's a beautiful
book.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.